Continuing with what we were talking about yesterday, that initially the incident around the delay of Moshe was not the most terrible thing in the world, because in Rabbi Leetag's view, analyzing the psukim, what happened is, hello, background noise. Okay, I muted any background noise. So we said that we got a stage of the game where things that may not be pristinely perfect, but they're not totally off the rails. Then the question is, why an egel? Now, we said yesterday that the egel appeared. They taught, as far as the common Jewish person was concerned, what happened was that, what happened was that all they saw was the jewels, gold, etc., get tossed into the flame, and out comes an egel. They didn't know that Micha had tossed in the pasuk alei shiur. But if you want to look at something else, Rabbi Leetag says, an egel could actually be seen as a symbol of the Ribbono shel Olam. And he says, I'm going to explain this. He says, I'm quoting the Chizkuni. And he says, go back to the pasuk at the end of the Har Sinai dedication ceremony. It says, Aaron Nadav Avihu, and the 70 elders were somehow permitted to have some sort of vision of the Almighty. The pasuk says, they saw Elokei Yisrael, and then it says, and Tachat Raglov, under quote, his metaphysical feet, was like shining sapphire. So my Leetag says, let's understand. Anything that describes the Ribbono shel Olam is only a metaphor, right? And it is a description of a certain spiritual level. Moshe received the highest level of spiritual experience, ponim beponim, face to face, whatever that means. The 70 Zakenim were only at a level to see Tachad Raglav, the level beneath the so-called feet of the Almighty. And he puts in a comment that the reason for this may be the very fact that Klal Yisrael said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we only want to hear the first two Dibros from you. We need to hear the rest from the Ribbono shel Olam. So maybe they caused some spacing. And then he says, I'm going to go to another place where it mentions, quote, the feet. And he says, in Sefer Yechezkel, because Kuni says, when describing the Shekhinah, the Pasuk in Yechezkel, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Zion says, and it's talking about, I'm sure, Malachim, their feet were straight, and the bottom of their feet appeared like the feet of an egel. And he says, one could suggest that when the elders saw the so-called feet of Hashem, they had the same manifestation. They saw something of an eagle, of a calf. And he says, I'll go one step further. Maybe an eagle is a representation of the very Purim, the oxes they brought on the part of the dedication ceremony that was in Har Sinai, at, right? Moshe had the, we sprinkled half the blood on the people and half on the Mizbeach. So he says, let's summarize. Aaron's intention in making the Egel appear to reflect a unified desire to create a representation of the Malach that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said would lead Klal Yisrael to Eretz Canaan. And we know that at, he says that at the ceremony, and I don't know which one, but at the elongated ceremonious event at Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, I'm going to send the Malach to lead you. So, as he says, the people in Aaron need a representation. They've made a mistake, granted. The mistake is Moshe is not gone, and Moshe is going to come back to lead them. But they have no way of knowing this. They had never expected him to be gone this long because they weren't told how long Moshe would be on Sinai. And so now, if to go on, they still want to be led by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is the way they best comprehend they can be led. And he says, I'm going to tell you something else. He says, when they decided that this Egel was appropriate, he says, it says, they sat to eat and drink, right? And it says at Har Sinai, they beheld the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they too went into this celebration. They ate and drank. But he says, now we have a problem. It says, at the Egel, it says, they ate and drank, and then it says, and they rose litzachek. And he calls this a critical difference. The simple translation of litzachek is laughing or frivolous behavior. Rashi raises the possibility that it may really refer to licentiousness, even murder. In any event, Chazal take this to mean more than a mitzvah tanz. They weren't dancing around and singing Am Yisrael Chai. What to Aaron's dismay, and he did not expect it, what was supposed to be a suda and a celebration for in honor of the Ribbono Shel Olam turned into a wild party, and some say even worse. Things got completely out of hand. And it says that when Moshe finally comes down from Har Sinai, he sees the Egel, Cholot, and the dancing circles, and then he becomes enraged. Maybe it is the very fact of this reaction, of this deviation, that really enraged Moshe. He says, let's look at the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam does not become angry at Moshe and tell him he must go down from Har Sinai at the moment the Egel is made. He says, as a matter of fact, the Egel is made day one, and the celebration is going to occur day two. It is only on day two that the Torah tells us that Vayakumu Litzachek, they got up for this terrible celebration. And now Moshe was sent down, and Moshe is angered. He says, not only seeing the Egel, which is a mistake, but the dancing. The wild, non-Jewish celebration, maybe akin to Ahasuerus' celebration at around the Purim time, that's what happens. As a matter of fact, he says, Yehoshua waited for Moshe at the foot of Har Sinai. And it says, Yehoshua hears the sound of the people, Berayo, screaming loudly, and he said to Moshe, I hear sounds of war. It sounds like a war cry in the camp. Moshe says, no, no, you make a mistake. This is not a sound of a triumphant army, nor are they the groans of those who've been defeated in war. They are simply Vildachai is letting off steam. And he says, I'll tell you something else. If you want to wonder what Yehoshua was saying, he says, Bereyo may mean something like making a truah sound. So Yehoshua did not suspect, before seeing the wild scene, that there was something in a totally inappropriate manner going on. And Rav Liebtag says, what was it that led to the calamity? He says, we only have circumstantial evidence. It says, one possibility is that when Klal Yisroel had lived for so long, up to about 7 weeks or so, amongst the depravity of Egypt, some of that stuck. They were falling back on their old Egyptian culture notions. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wish, hope, had been that with free will, the experience of going out of Egypt and the revelation on Har Sinai would change their ways. But he says, it seems that what might have happened is that once they got into a bit of simcha, somehow their Yetzer Hara took them back to the old manner, the type of feasting that took place in the old country. Hashem becomes angry. But more than that, he's disappointed. And I find this is really, you know, how does Hashem become disappointed? Hashem knows what's going to happen. Despite the numerous miracles he had done for the Jewish people up to this point, they stumbled. And maybe it indicates that while Hashem had taken the Jews out of Mitzrayim, he hadn't fully taken Mitzrayim out of the Jews. So, he says, what we've done is we've shown there were two stages. First, there was the making of a physical representation of Hashem's Malach. And that's improper. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu could say that was understandable. You had enough reasons with this notion of the Moloch leading you and the assumption that Moshe is gone. But when you fell into this terrible behavior at the party, that's it. And he says, when we look at Perek Lamed Beis, Hashem says to Moshe, hurry down. Your people have acted basely. They turned away from the mitzvah and they made an egel as a representation of me. But then there's a second statement. In the next two psukim, Hashem said to Moshe, I see this nation and it is kishei oref, stiff-necked people. Allow me now to throw my anger at them, right? I am going to destroy every one of them, and I'm going to create a new nation from you, Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically said, Vayoymer, it says he said it twice, as if to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped to say, the first problem was enough, but we could have dealt with that. The second one is the demise of Klal Yisroel. Good intentions could govern step one, but not step two. And this is what Hashem says. They're stiff-necked people. They refuse to change. They will not abandon the old ways. And he says, we're going to look at what happens when Moshe speaks to Aaron. He says, what did this people do to you that caused them to bring such a terrible event, sin? And Aaron says, you know, Kibarahu, the people unfortunately have an evil inclination. Moshe understood that Aaron was trying to make a party for the Malach to represent Hashem. And Aaron was hoping that Moshe would come down in the middle and say, my dear children, my Tyra Kinder, this is not the way to serve Hashem. And it would have ended there. There would have been no problem. And Moshe saw the people, Kiparuahu. They became wild out of control. He says, and this is difficult, Aaron caused them to become wild to the point of their demise. When they got up for this party to dance, he says, finally, there are two levels of punishment meted out by the Rabboni Shel Olam for this. The 3,000 actual instigators, who I think many Mefarshim claim were the Erev Rav and not really Jews, the 3,000 who were involved in this party, they were killed. For that group, they were beyond repair. They had to cease. The rest of the nation, we're told, and by the Mefarshim, the rest of the nation should have protested immediately. They should have taken those 3,000 tzadkiskis and beaten the hell out of them, or something like that. They basically tolerated. And tolerating this is inappropriate. But HaKadosh Moshe Rabbeinu is going to try. He hasn't given up on attaining forgiveness for the second group of the people who have been caught up as bystanders. We're told that Moshe took Diego, he burnt it, he made it into ashes, and he made the people drink from it, as like a woman who's a sota, being tested by the holy waters. And anyone who was guilty of true avodah zarah, right, would presumably die at that time. And even Aaron, it says, received a punishment similar to that of a Saita, since he had been on high level and had been involved in the production of the ego. And it says the Rabbeinu Shel Olam punishes the adulterer. And if their offspring in their belly, they die. Nadav and Avihu were taken by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam on the eighth day of the dedication of the Mikdash, so to speak. This was the kapora, or the punishment for Aaron. He said, Moshe needed a beis din to be able to judge people who would have been guilty of avodah zarah, but somehow had not been punished as yet. There was only one Shevet, Levi, who had not been involved at all. And it says there were also certain, there were the Nesiim, the princes of the tribes didn't get drawn in, and there were a number of people who remained with their tzidkus. They remained whole, pristine and holy. And so they had based or bate dinim set up, and where appropriate, they would have two witnesses say, Shmerel was guilty of avodah zarah. I guess they would have to say he had some type of hisra, some type of warning. And it says Moshe understood, without a direct command from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that this would be required before he could get any further tshuva from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, allowing the Jews to be forgiven. Because it says, someone who sacrifices to any god except for Hashem should be destroyed. And he says here, that's how the Erev Rav were destroyed. The 3,000 people actually had a beis din decide their guilt. And it's only after they had died that Moshe was ready then to go ahead and attempt to take on the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Because Moshe reasoned that as long as there are vestiges of the actual sin and perpetrators alive, I can't get forgiveness for those who were the bystanders. Moshe said to the people, you made a tremendous sin. He said, all of you are guilty The fact that you didn't protest, the fact that you didn't stop this Chilul Hashem, puts you in Dutch. And I'm going to attempt to get forgiveness from the Rabbona Shel Olam. I'm going to attempt. He didn't say, I'm going to succeed. And we're told that the day Moshe came down, right, and he broke the Luchos because he saw this debacle was Shiva Asar B'Tamas, the 17th of Tamas. He spent the 18th of Tamas setting up the Batei Dinim and having the people, have the people executed, and then we're going to start tomorrow with the 19th of Tammuz, when Moshe goes back up onto the mountain, and on that day, he goes up to the mountain, and he stays there, as we well know, until Yom Kippur. Okay. So this is Rabbi Liebtag's approach to the incident of the Egel. I believe, and I couldn't find it, I believe Rav Chaim Mezi, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, also went through this in this way, but I don't have the shiur where he did it. But I think, from my recollection, it was mostly the same material, very similar. Okay. Ready. We'll stop here now, and we will pick up Yezrath Hashem tomorrow. Thanks for your time. Have a fantastic day.